Good evening, you guys. To make sure all my audio is getting through. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. I see the audio is set a little bit lower tonight than it was last time. This is the Technical Net. We meet most Sunday nights. Tonight we're doing an unusual experiment. 98% of the American public that likes football is watching the big football game tonight, the Super Bowl. And we're going to do an experiment tonight. Is there anybody not watching the Super Bowl that's willing to sign into the TechNet? Other than Joe, W2LYY, I wonder if there's anybody else. We'll soon find that out. Going to usually have Roy AC2GS with a couple of fascinating puzzles he's come up with. We're going to have Paul, WS2N, with the workings of NASA and the Japan Space Agency and all the other agencies, the Space Report. And I'm going to try to cover questions and answers that hopefully will come along. Let me drop this. Both Roy and Paul. Like you guys to participate. So if you got the slightest question of anything that they're talking about or any suggestions for changes, please speak up. When it comes to the first section, where we have questions and answers with reference to ham radio usually, but not necessarily, any subject of interest to ham radio operators. I'd like to mention the fact that almost every ham radio operator has a slight understanding for how a transmission line works and what is standing wave ratio, but how the transmission line works when it's properly matched at each end. Many amateurs, though, have a good deal of trouble understanding where if the load at the far end of the transmission line, a 50-ohm transmission line, for instance, happens not to be a 50-ohm resistor at the antenna, does that not act like a 50-ohm resistor? And you can't tell that with your ohmmeter. I mean, if there's an inductor across the transmission line at the antenna, your ohmmeter will show nearly 0 ohms. But when you get up to a radio frequency, that inductor that's at the far end suddenly develops inductive reactance. X sub L, we call it. X sub L equals 2 pi FL. 2 pi is a constant. L is a constant if your inductance is constant. But F, as you increase the frequency, the amount of inductive reactance increases. Inductive reactance really means that at an AC frequency of that frequency, your radio ohmmeter, so to speak, shows a whole lot of ohms, even though your ordinary DC ohmmeter shows very few ohms. Let me drop. But the spooky thing about transmission line is its impedance inverting characteristic. 50 ohms at the far end of a 50-ohm cable, you're going to see 50 ohms looking into the near end. If the far end has a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio, strange things happen. And there's a whole lot of different ways of getting a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. If the antenna acted as a 100-ohm resistor, 100 ohms compared to 50, 2-to-1 ratio, it's going to generate a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. If the antenna is a 25-ohm resistor, again, between 25 and 50, there's a 2-to-1 ratio. So again, you'll have a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. So two of the many ways, a 100-ohm resistor, 100-ohm antenna, an antenna that acts like 100 ohms, so an antenna that acts like 25 ohms, in either case, get a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. So the amount of reflected power is the same, but the characteristic is not the same. In the case of the 100-ohm antenna, the signal reflected from the antenna reflects in phase. But when the impedance of the antenna is lower than the transmission line, the 25 ohm, it gives you an inverted phase. If the signal going into the antenna at this instant is a positive going portion of the sine wave, the antenna will reflect a negative voltage at that instant. Craziness. The transmission line acts that way. It's called the impedance inverting characteristic. So the number of amateurs who've got a warm, fuzzy feeling for what's happening inside of a transmission line. What's happening inside of a transmission line when you've got a high or a low impedance, this impedance inverting characteristic, many an amateur is not familiar with that. And now if you have higher or lower impedance combined with some reactance, that the antenna acts like a little bit of an inductor, a little bit of a capacitor, boy, life gets more complicated. The number of amateurs who can solve that is probably 5%. I could give you a formula that would give you an answer. The Smith chart would give you an answer. Not many amateurs feel a warm, fuzzy feeling, feel familiar with a Smith chart. So I'm giving you a little bit of a hint of some of the things that many amateurs would like to know, because the way it's been explained to them in the past left them confused. I didn't say it's a simple subject. I didn't say I've got a simple explanation. But as we discuss it some more, it'll make a little bit more sense. So this is a section where people are going to sign in because they do have a question or a comment. So far we got Joe, W-A-2-R-Y-Y. And if you're going to sign in because you do have a question or a comment, and I hope you do, you're going to give me your call letters and your name, because I'm so forgetful, followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. So wait for the beeps and sign in right now. K2RIW in the TechNet listening.
K2RIW, yes.
That was almost a good sign.
FHO, yes, there was a comment.
Okay, so far we've got Rich and John, I think it is, SHO. Okay, anyone else to sign in? Give me your call letters and name right now.
Intuition.
That mysterious person was probably Wes. So each of these guys are forgetting to give me their name. They're positive they're so well known. So far we've got Roy, Rich, John, and Wes. One last call. Anyone else to sign in? And it looks like somebody in the world is not watching the Super Bowl. There are people not watching the Super Bowl willing to sign into the TechNet. How about that? One last call. Anyone out there? Give me your call letters and name right now.
WS2N, Paul. No questions, but we're not watching the Super Bowl, but we're here then.
You're one of those strange guys, Paul. I imagine if I polled Roy, AC2GS, bet you he's watching the Super Bowl. He's got one ear on the Super Bowl and one ear on the TechNet. Maybe. We'll soon find out. Joe, W-A-2-R-Y-Y, go easy with us tonight. Sometimes you ask some pretty tough questions. You got it, Joe. K-2-R-I-W. That was an extremely noisy signal. Was that Andy CDL? You're 95% noise, 5% audio. If I didn't recognize your voice, I never would have been able to pick out those call letters. It was that bad, Andy. Are you in the hole, under the floor, in your basement, with a handy talkie? Is that what we're hearing, Andy?
I don't think it's Andy.
I heard you say, no, you're up on the second floor. But I think you gave me another set of words after that, Andy, which I did not copy. And I recognize the voice of Andy, the A2CDL. What in the world are you doing that's making it so poor tonight? Or maybe the input on Glen Oaks has turned off. Is that what's going on, Andy? The A2CDL, K2RIW. Any of the other words. Is there any way you can aim more antenna at the repeater or run any higher power, Andy? Because you're still running 95% noise. CDL, K2RIW.
standby signal.
That standby was a little bit better.
All right, I went upstairs. Now you'll hear me. I want to rest my voice because I'm fighting this cold. I don't know why I'm so weak. The repeater used to be full quieting into it from this location. So I don't know what's going on with the repeater. Definitely the repeater is not on my end. No, I wanted to say, and I just said, W2BZ with a screwdriver antenna problem. He said he would go on and talk to you about it. Because I told him to sign into the TechNet, and you can have a discussion with him because he's having some trouble with it. So I don't know where he is. I just wanted to let you know. You know, keep an eye out for him because he may show up.
I'm going to keep an ear out for W2BZ. W2BZ, do you happen to be on frequency so we can add you to the list? Go right ahead.
Just to let you know, he was having trouble getting into Selden. I know he lives out east. And we were having a conversation yesterday, and all of a sudden he dropped out and never came back. And he said something is wrong with his radio. So, but he came on earlier today with a portable, with a handheld, so I don't know. All right, I just wanted to let you know, I really want to rest my voice because you can hear how it sounds.
Yeah, you got to make sure you get rid of that cold before you go to Orlando. W2BZ, I'm going to listen on both outputs and inputs, both inputs. W2BZ, are you there, Rich? KQRIW? Apparently not. Okay, Joe, once again, W2RYY, KQRIW, you got it, Joe.
Okay, W2RYY here. Good evening, Dick. I have a non-amateur radio question for you. It's concerning DTV reception. Ready for that one?
I'm far from an expert on digital television, but if Eric is around, he'll most likely be able to answer your question, so fire away.
Okay, for a while, like about maybe a month or so, maybe more, I've noticed that channel 55 Digital, which is actually on RF27, has two channels. They have a main channel and a second channel. Why are you heterodyning with me?
Hey, me. So I'm hearing you beautifully, so don't worry. Just keep going. But I can go over that guy also. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, I can receive 55-1, can't receive 55-2 on my Insignia decoders. I can receive 55-2 if I turn a decoder off and let it work as an antenna pass-through, which it's capable of doing once you turn the power off, and it has that function. And my tuner's inside my Magnavox ZV457MG9, because I know you like model numbers. You're always going to ask me, what's the model number? There it is. I have three of those to match my three converters that I use for outside television reception and recording programs to view later. That has a tuner, an ATSC tuner, and that can decode 55-2. If I put it on sub-channel for English, like 2-2, I'll get the audio to follow with it also. That production of that unit was about 2012 vintage, give or take, going forward. The Insignia converters are around, say, a 2008-2009 vintage, so they're obviously earlier vintage. Is something being done with the formatting or encoding why one decoder cannot look at a sub-channel and another type of decoder of a later vintage, later version, can? Back to you.
I get 55-1 and 55-2, which I think is NHK. I think it's almost always of Japanese origin. You get a different kind of a logo. So there's something about the Japanese NHK that apparently is different. So before we turn it over to Eric, if he happens to be available for a possible answer on why you can get one and not the other on a particular converter of yours, I am curious on each of your converters. When you add a preamp, maybe the preamp is in the shack with you, of the converters give you an improvement in sensitivity with the preamp added? Or on some of those converters, does the preamp not do anything? Answer that question first for me, Joe. The B2LYY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, I'll answer that then very simplistically. And this is the way it's always been since around 2009 when I put up my outside antenna for DTV reception. I have an antenna about 31 feet above the ground. It has a rotator. It's a WineGuard HD8200U model antenna. It has a mass mounted preamp running with DC up the coax cable. The preamp is mounted before the antenna, obviously. There is a filter between the preamp input and the antenna to knock out signals past 750 megahertz, so it won't amplify cellular signals 800 megahertz and above. That comes down and runs into a multi-set splitter downstairs and runs my three TV locations. There's no preamps on any converter after the one on the roof. I simply run the converter into a splitter. One side goes to TV for DirecTV reception, and the other leg of the splitter runs into the input of the my Magnavox DVD tape recorders combo units. That's how my setup works. That way I can watch TV if the recorder is set to record a channel and it's not running, or it's in standby mode. I can still view TV on the regular main RF input coming out of the converter directly. That's how my setup works. Who's transmitting on top of me?
That's me, Joe. WS2M.
That's an interesting setup you've got there, Joe. A serious ATV washer with that preamp on the antenna, and then the power splitter down below that's feeding all of those. So,
repeater, timeout.
Not a power splitter downstairs. NOT, not a power splitter downstairs. There's one amplifier at the antenna, and it goes into a four-port splitter downstairs to run at least three TV locations. The fourth one's a spare, not powered.
Okay. A splitter, to many people, is called a power divider if it happens to be a two-way. And it can be a saw power divider if it's a four-way. I didn't say it's a power divider. I'm saying it's a power divider. It's an antenna splitter. My guess is you never, in recent times, ran any of those preamps barefoot. In other words, no preamp and the signal going straight into the preamp to find out how much increase in sensitivity, into the converter. You never ran the antenna straight into the transmission line, straight into a converter. Or at least recently you haven't done that. So if someone asked you, once you've added a preamp in front of the converter, did it give you a significant amount of sensitivity improvement? I think the answer is right now you might not know. That's a guess on my part. Back to you on that one, Joe. K2LIW.
I actually experimented that. I had another preamp, wideband preamp made by Radio Shack, one of these for in-housing with adjustable gain on it, and I did measure it, and it has a coverage up to about 840, 850, 860, something like that, before it starts rolling off. That really made no difference on a converter as far as it increasing the sensitivity. Apparently, you get to a certain point, and if you put more signals in your converter or more amplification, it doesn't make it really hear any better. But here's the thing, Dick. 55-1 and 55-2 are on the same RF carrier frequency. And it's Comet TV is on 55-2. I happen to see that when I let the Magnavox tuner pick it up. So if it's coming on the same frequency, it's a sub-channel, a digital sub-channel. I can get the main, can't get the second one. And Paul must have had a comment or something.
Yes, he did, and he's patiently standing by. Paul, WS2N, go right ahead, K2RIW.
I got a similar setup with my TVs. I have three different locations as well. The only difference, I don't have the preamp mounted at the antenna. I got the HD antenna on the chimney. It comes down,
to, they call it a preamp, it's made by Philips, and it's plugged in, you know, it's plugged into the wall, so it's definitely an amplifier, and that goes to the splitter, like Joe has four different possibilities. I have mine going to three different locations as well, and one is a blank. But that's the real difference, and I do notice a huge difference. If I didn't have that thing plugged in, I wouldn't even bother trying to look at TV. I would get maybe two or three stations at the most. But with this, I get all your stations. Except for 13, that's a different topic. 13 went away a couple of months ago. I can't get it back. Not that it matters. I picked up 21. So, 13 must have did something different. Back to you, Dick.
Paul, is your preamp in the shack or is your preamp on the antenna? On your previous experiments of sensitivity, go ahead.
No, it's not on the antenna. You know, you have an antenna on a roof that comes down with coax, and then I have it go into this amplifier it's actually in the basement. And then from there, it goes to the splitter. This way I get three different TVs all on one amplifier. And there's a huge difference. I mean, in the beginning when I first hooked it up, I would have been maybe two or three stations, that's it. And then once I had it hooked up, I would get like a lot of stations. And then once I adjusted the antenna, it was even better. But it would be useless without that amplifier.
Now, without the preamplifier, your signal is useless. However, when you ran it barefoot without a preamplifier, was the transmission line from the antenna going straight into one single converter, or is it always going to a 4-to-1 power divider with one output blank, and then going to three separate converters? So when you had very poor sensitivity without the preamp, was the power divider there, or was that even true when you went straight into one single converter? Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
In the beginning, I was just going to one TV converter box and then into a regular CRT TV. But, then naturally things grow after that. That works so good. So I wound up putting TVs in the basement, TV in one of the other rooms, So that's what happened. It grew from there. But in the beginning, it was just one TV. And it was terrible, And then, actually, originally I started with an indoor TV. Indoor amplifier antenna. Let me see what happens. I think I got one or two stations. And then the antenna on the roof did better, maybe three, four, five stations. And then with the amplifier, all the stations, two, four, well, actually, I shouldn't say that. Four was a problem in the beginning. Then they changed their location. But 2, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, and 21, and all those other higher numbers were all coming in with the amplifier.
Okay, you're answering my question now to you, Paul. Did you have a question you wanted to ask the group? WS2N, K2RAW?
Yes, I know you have over-the-air TV. Has channel 13 changed for you at all in the last couple of months? I lost it about 2.5-3 months ago. Gone, and I never came back. I thought maybe it was because of the weather. Then I tried good days, bad days, daytime, nighttime. It's just gone. Maybe they relocated or put a different antenna up or lowered their power or something. It's gone.
I suspect you'll be able to get channel 13 back if you have a rotator on the television aerial. Does your television aerial have a rotator, Paul?
No, that's where Joe's got me beat. Yeah, I know that might work. But something must have changed. I was getting 13 for a couple of years, 3 or 4 years. Now it's gone, so I think they changed something. Yeah, you're probably right.
Paul, question, is your antenna have sufficient gain on the VHF compared to UHF?
Well, it's, one of these supposedly HD antennas, one of these $60 antennas, it's probably got about
10 elements on it, Joe.
What brand name is that antenna? There's an antenna that's manufactured in Hupark, where I knew the guy who so-called designed the antenna. I was working with that organization at the time. And the VHF portion was a very spooky design, which didn't have very much gain. So where was your television aerial manufactured, Paul? Go ahead.
I'll have to check again. Yeah, it came out of Walmart. They still have them there. It's surprisingly very good. So, no, I don't know the name right now. Maybe I'll search the internet. I'll find it. Back to you, Dick.
Let's see if Eric is available. Eric, KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet. You around, Eric?
K2RIW, yes, I am around, and I'm listening to you guys, and one thing I will say is that when it comes to preamps and digital TV, most people don't do the right thing. What you really should do is figure out what the actual loss is from where the antenna is to the input of the converter or the TV chip, figure out exactly what that loss is in dB, and then set the gain for your preamp to that exact number and run the preamp right at the antenna's output. That actually works out well for a lot of different reasons, and also depends upon the preamp, whether it's VHF, UHF, or a combination.
That's a good ballpark setting, Eric. But if you study the cascaded noise figure formula, you'll discover that if your feed line had, let me pick a number, 5 dB of loss, and if you had 5 dB of preamplification gain at the antenna, you study what's going on, you'll find that of the total noise being seen by the converter, half of the noise would be coming from the preamp, and half of the noise would be coming from the transmission line. So additional preamplification gives you a mixed blessing. Much more vulnerability to intermod, and that's what you're worrying about, but a slightly lowering noise figure. You can take out 2 or dB of noise figure by using excess gain. Rough rule of thumb. You're a little bit noisy. You're about 40% noise, 60% audio, Eric. You sound good, don't worry. You don't have to make any great change. But the main question Joe is asking is that when he's looking at channel 50-1 and 50-2, they're both on the same RF carrier frequency, on one of his converters at least, 50-1 comes in beautifully, 50-2 and HK does not come through one of the converters. So even though the exact same carrier frequency, what's NHK doing that's not so compatible with one of his older converters? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Correction, channel 55, not channel 50. Otherwise, he's going to give you an answer out of New Jersey.
Yeah, make believe I said 55 on everywhere. 55-1 and 55-2. Go ahead, Eric.
Are we talking about WLNY or WNJB?
WLNY.
No, I generally don't get LNY, but are you saying you're getting on 55-2, you're getting the NHK? Is that correct?
No, I created that confusion. But the 55-1, he gets fine. 55-2, on at least one of his converters, 55-2 does not come through, even though it's the exact same RF carrier frequency. What's your guess as to what's going on there, Eric?
I didn't use the word NHK. I didn't say that at all. I think Paul said that. That's not what's on here. It's called Comet TV. They run a lot of old reruns and stuff. I have no idea what NHK is.
NHK is my mistake on 50-1 and 50-2. Now we know it's 55-1 and 55-2. No NHK. What looks stiff at about 55-2. That's not coming through one of his converters. Over to you, Eric.
Okay. Well, I had MHA, that's for me, because one of the sub-channels on New Jersey television is MHK, which I put on, actually. What I would recommend that he do is look at the serial numbers of the converted boxes that he has. Now, don't forget, every manufacturer has to write their own software. Every manufacturer has to go beyond a certain point of the chips that are manufactured for the modulating. The fact that you have one stream, just say to the same RFK, you know, if you have 55-1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, it will be the same RFK. They're all AM modulated. It's actually a single carrier providing all that information. Take a look at the serial numbers of the converter box. You may find a big difference in serial numbers, whereas that the noise figures within the equalizer, the giant Q decoder, the trellis decoders may be somewhat different. The earlier one does a lousier job, and the later one does a better job. And the reason why is because the bit rate, the 55-1 is going to be running the higher bit rate. If I was actually at my place of work, I could tell you exactly what the stream rates are. And the 55-2 is going to be a much slower or much lower bit rate. So one, the decoder box does a better job with the lower bit rate than the other one does. And usually that's because of the difference in time of manufacture, and as the manufacturers make their stuff, they learn as they go.
Now 55-2 most likely is the lower bit rate, and his 55-2 is the one he's having trouble getting.
Repeater, timeout.
What in the world makes a lower bit rate more difficult to demodulate? It seems backwards. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Let me give a correction here also, so you'll understand the whole picture, because you weren't tuned in earlier, maybe. All three Insignia DTV converters I have, and I have actually two spares, I had tried my two spares also, none of them will decode 55-2. The converter has, it's a dash APT, which means antenna pass-through, so when you turn the converter off, RF from the input goes directly to the output, not through the converter. If I turn the converter off and let the tuner in the Magnavox DVD tape combo units I have decode the picture, if I search for channels, instead of just having a setup on channel RF ring, I can get 55-2 on all three Magnavox units. They were built around 2012 and later. The converters, I suspect, were probably built around 2008, 2009, going forward. But I have newer converters and older converters. None of them in the Insignia brand will decode 55-2. But the Magnavoxes with their APS-C tuners inside, all three of them will decode 55-2. Strange, huh?
All right, just let me point out a couple things to you guys. In the good old days of analog TV, you had a carrier which was AM modulated. You stuffed that into a diode and you got video out of it. It was IF and that kind of stuff in between. In this world, it's not the same game. We come up with RF, we make bits that are buzzing along, we do some special encoding called TELUS and a few other things. We actually take that and turn it into a stream of digits. Now, what happens after that is a whole bunch of other stuff. Okay, and the other stuff is we have something called PSIP, Program System Information Protocol Packets. These packets identify what the stuff is and where it is. Then, after that, there's a sublayer, which is an MPEG device, an MPEG packet. There's an MPEG video packet, an MPEG audio packet, or it could be AC3. And these things are pulled off serially. It's as though you had a long shift register, and you're pulling these bits out at different points of the shift register. Then, you've got to actually do some decoding and put the stuff back together through discrete cosine transforms and so on and so forth. There can be very major differences between how a manufacturer chooses to take it apart. So there's a lot of variables to talk about in terms of trying to put your finger on what's actually going on with a particular sub-channel, so to speak.
The day I told you that 9-4 disappeared and we had a little conversation on the air with ZSE at the same time, later on that night they all of a sudden reappeared again, but I still don't have 5-4. Now the funny thing is the decoder, if I press the signal strength button on it, it says there's a carry there, but it also gives me an indication of no signal. So the decoder is looking at something, but it can't decode what it sees.
Quite hear exactly what you said. I'm not in a good position. Could you just repeat that for me?
Yeah, there's a double question involved in this one. Stand by. About 3 or 4 days ago, 5-1, beautiful. 5-2 and 5-4, not there. 9-1, beautiful. 9-2, 3, and 4, gone. That was a few days ago. In the last day or two, 5-2 has come back. 5-4 is still gone. 9-1, 2, 3, and 4 are now all there. So lots of changes are being made. So the fact that he's getting a carrier on 5-4, but no video or audio, suggests they're just not putting a program material on 5-4. I presume they've been making antenna and feed line changes recently at the Freedom Tower. Bunch of guesses on my part. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Okay, so actually, that's an answer to that. The changes aren't actually being made at Freedom Tower, the changes are being made at the station itself. I think it was a year ago that 5-1 and 5-2, one was HD, the other one was SD, has gone. They have reshuffled some of the streams. The RFK that's being fed into the transmitter, the actual streams themselves, as far as, you know, the receivers are concerned, it's still the same. It's just that there's no data there anymore. They've rearranged how they have their program streams set up. And, like, for example, on 13, which I know very well, we've got 13 and 13 kids, but we also have WMDQ, we've got WMDT, which is 14, and the other one is 40-something. They're all coming out of the transmitter that we call 13, but the PSIP are providing other programs with other call signs and other content. Well, 5 and 9, both being owned by Fox, they're doing a bit of manipulating themselves. So now everything is settled down and constant. If you actually rescan the channels, you'll find the markers for channels that were there will disappear, and everything will be just as it is now. So, yeah. So, yeah, they've been changing bit rates of stuff and moving them around, making the pictures a little better in some respects and lousier in others.
Repeater, timeout.
Dick, I'm glad that you observed the same thing I observed. So if we both observed the same thing, do you think there's hundreds of other people that have observed the same thing, that they can't watch TV, that the broadcasters think is being transmitted over the air?
My answer to that, Joe, is probably no. There are only two weird human beings on Long Island watching over-the-air broadcast television in eastern Nassau and Suffolk. In New York City, it's different. But out here in Nassau and Suffolk, only two human beings are watching over-the-air television. The rest of them are are not doing it over the air. By the way, Eric, 13-1 and 13-2 for children, we know about that. I didn't know that 14 is also really 13. That's the one with the Swedish programming, 14. And I'm not sure whether or not that 20-1 and 20-2 that used to be there, are those also subchannels of 13? You made it sound like 13 now has four subchannels. I think I'm only seeing three. Correction, two. 13, 13.2, and yes, 14. Is there a fourth subchannel on 13? And I know it's not 17. I also get 17, a weak AEM station. KE2EJ for any other info. K2RW, go ahead, Eric.
K2RW, K2EJ. Yes, there's four channels coming out of there. There's WNET, that's the 13-1, and 13 Kids, which is 13-2. There's WMBQ, which is, I think it's 46. And there's WMCT, which is 14-1. Or maybe I had it the other way around. I can look at that. Also on WLIW right now, there's WLIW, there's WLIW Create, there's World, which actually comes out of Boston. And now we have another channel called All Arts, which is 21-4. So yeah, there's a lot of manipulation that can go on. And, you know, we typically think of one TV station as one frequency, and that's what's going on with Fox. Is they have WRNN in their stream, which you don't see when you're looking at 5 or 9. I forget what the actual channel number is, but it's there. It's coming out of their transmitter. So yeah, there's a lot of that stuff happening.
They come out of the transmitter on channel RF-25, which is 9-1, 9-1, 9-3, 9-4, and then 48, 1, 2, and 3 are all on RF-25. They're just playing piggyback. See, the difference between my remote reception and yours is you're plugging your stuff now into a TV in your living room. You can enjoy watching pictures, but that TV will not let you tell you what carrier it's receiving. My signal converters, I can easily do that by pressing the button in the center for tuning, and I can instantly go back and tell what RF channel I'm looking at, irregardless of the sub-channel I'm tuned to. Did you throw your converter away or still have it available? Maybe it'll hook that together with a two-port splitter. And when you want to do DXing or TV, you feel inquisitive, you can use your converter, or just relax and watch the big TV in your living room.
Yeah, my old-fashioned converter, I think, is a Walmart. There, I'm not sure. And it comes out with amplitude modulated, which I guess I could force my TV, my digital TV, to watch amplitude modulated signal. I am guessing that your Insignia and your Magnavox converters have only analog output. I'm guessing your converters do not have a digital output. Is that true, Joe? W2LYY, K2LIW?
Yeah, I thought you said you're using the Zenith converter, which is made by the same company as mine, apparently made by LG Electronics in Korea. They have video and two audio connections for left-right audio out of the back of the converter. So you could probably do that and just take video and audio out of the converter and feed that into your television set. You don't have to feed an RF signal back in. I'm sure you can do that.
Yes, you're right. I could have video and left and right audio by way of RCA phono jack type cables. When I previously was talking about amplitude modulator, I was talking about channel 3 RF remodulated, which I could use, but that'd be foolish. So, I've got to do some more experimenting. Anything more we should be discussing on television while we're on that subject tonight, Joe? W-H-2-L-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Not directly for me. The reason, I'll just tell you the reason why I use a converter ahead of the Magnavox, which has an internal tuner inside, is because sometimes the internal tuner will not record on it. If you try to record a pre-program like 2-1 or 4-1 or 5-1, it gets confused and doesn't do it. I've had a couple episodes where I tried doing it using the Magnavox's internal tuner, and I'll end up with a blank disk because there's nothing on it because it gets confused and doesn't tune to the right sub-channel. So the answer to that was I use the output of my Insignias on RF3, which is analog, fit into the converter input of the Magnavox, which is now looking at RF3 analog, and it's worked perfectly all the time. If I want to record something, the Magnavox only has one RF frequency you can look at. Can't get confused about that. So that's what I'm doing. As far as me, I know I have no more DTV questions for this evening.
Good questions. Glad you asked them. Next person on our list was Rich, N2EO. N2EO, who's not going to discuss anything medical, and he's not going to discuss anything political, he's not going to discuss anything controversial. Go ahead, Rich, N2EO, K2RIW.
I guarantee that, Dick. You told me. N2EO, well, I want to discuss Landon. That's Jeremy's little boy, Jeremy's Patty's son. And the boy has a birthday coming up March 5th. And I'm thinking of buying him a quadcopter. Why do they range in price so much from $199 to $1,500? And I guess that, do you think a 9-year-old can handle it? I guess either me or his father will help him.
Yeah, the guys that are very good on quadcopters, there's a man who gets on this repeater periodically. I'm looking him up right now. You heard him on from time to time. Oh, I got the wrong piece of paper here. There's at least two guys that are pretty good on quadcopters. K-A-2-Y-H-Y is one of them. And the other one I'll get you in a second. These two guys know an awful lot about quadcopters. They've owned multiple brands. The cheapest quadcopters have got very little internal compensation. The ones that are made, gosh, I can't even think of the brand name right now. There's a very popular brand name that starts at around $550 for the medium version, and there's a expensive version for commercial purposes, so to speak, that goes to closer to $1,500, which has got all kinds of fancy automatic home mode and whatever, and GPS and a real good camera stability system. Okay, KC2, oh, I'm on the wrong page. Yeah, KC2YSK, KC2YSK is the guy who is most familiar with all of these fancy quadcopters. KA2YHY owns a few of them, but KC2YSK, Jay, down a little bit less these days because he's not going to school every single day anymore. He teaches. He's the guy you want to talk to. My impression, and by the way, Jay, let me drop.
Eagle of Flying, answer, Danny, and it's DJI you're looking for.
Yep, DJI is the brand name of the real good one. And if you go to YouTube videos, and you look for Jay's last name, Marucci, M-A-R-R-U-C-C-I, M-A-R-R, I got it correct? Yes, M-A-R-C-U-C-C-I, M-A-R-C-U-C-C-I. You go to YouTube video and search on M-A-R-C-U-C-C-I. And if you have trouble remembering it, just go to QRZ.com for KC2YSK, and you'll get his full name. He's got 15 videos in there, which shows you what the DJI can really do. And boy, it can do a lot. The DJI quadcopter is $550 roughly for the basic one, and almost twice the price for the really super duper one. Even with the medium expensive ones and the super duper one, still there's a reasonable amount of learning curve. A person under, let me pick a number, 18 years of age, without an hour's worth of instruction for the 18 year older, he's going to get himself in trouble. Anybody under 18 years of age, without an hour's worth of instruction, is going to get in trouble. There's a good chance he's going to lose the copter somewhere. It'll go out of sight, you won't know where it is, you won't know how to find it. So, although it's a real fun toy, for somebody younger than those ages, from what I am hearing, it is my recommendation that you buy him some other toy. You're going to be paying $150 to $500 for the thing you're going to buy. He's not going to get very much use out of it before it...
Repeater, timeout.
He's not going to get very much use out of it before it either it gets damaged or lost. You take a guy who is quite highly skilled, KC2YSK. KA2YHY. That's Steve. KA2YHY, Steve. He's a guy of our age with a lot of skill. And he lost one of his quadcopters. And I think the other one, he had another one that became damaged. So I think there is a high probability you're about to spend a medium amount of money and you're about to become very frustrated if you're about to give this as a toy to a young person. The chances of success on that is very low unless an extremely skilled person is the mentor giving him the conversion and only letting him touch the stick a few times as he goes through the learning curve. If you don't have a highly skilled mentor, you're about to throw away quite a bit of money, in my opinion, Rich. I do not recommend this. It sounds good on paper. You talk to the people who have really been there, and you look at these videos and you find out how complicated it is. The chances of you having success is very low. I know you're going to disagree with me. N2EO, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
Bravo Zulu with a comment.
Rich first, and then we'll go over to Bravo Zulu. Go ahead, N2EO.
Don't necessarily disagree with you. I'm a little disappointed in what you're saying. I was thinking $500 one. I thought maybe me and Jeremy, his father, could go 50-50.
Let's see what the other Rich has to say. Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu. Maybe he owns one of these and maybe he's got a different opinion. Rich number 2, go right ahead, BZ.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu. My name is Rich, also Zipcom. Yeah, I've had experience. And by the way, these things now could go up to $20,000 for TV and motion picture work. And I feel sorry for the helicopter guys and the crane operators because they're sort of being pushed out of business. There's a quadcopter called the SYMA, SYMAX5C, I believe, -1. That's $35 and a great beginning. Has no fancy anything, has no automatic anything, but if a kid wants to get into this, he'll sure know after, or you'll sure know, Rich, after he plays with this if he is interested in it or is just a passing fad. For $25, Rich.
N2EO to comment.
Hi, Joe, N2EO.
I was looking at TV about a week or so ago, and there was a clip on somebody robbing something out of Micro Center in Westbury. And I didn't even know this. Apparently, they sell quadcopters in there. So you might go in there
and the guy may be able to show you a range of what they have as far as quadcopters, from real simple toys to something more expensive, and you might be able to get a realistic idea if it's something you really want to go for, because the guy may be able to take it out and demonstrate it for you and actually give you a direct you know, demonstration as far as what one can do compared to what another can do. I'm sure they sell different varieties there. Back to you.
This is Whiskey 2 Bravo. Let me just see if I... people who aren't selling these, but who know what they're doing, say that, you know, this is hand-eye coordination, and that has to be developed first. And you can do that very inexpensively, and there's something called walking the dog. Once you are able to have a quadcopter follow you at eye level, any way you go, with you, of course, controlling it, then you know that you could control one of these. I think the guys who are selling it might say, well, you know, there are automatic, automatic hover levels and all this stuff that makes it easier. For a kid, you don't want to make it easier. You want to make it harder. Go ahead, Rick.
KA2YH1.
Okay, let's pick up Steve. KA2YHY. Go right ahead, Steve.
Okay. Here's the thing. This spend is $25, $35. But it will take practice. The more expensive ones are easy to fly, no question. And ones that really go up there really can't lose. They come back home when you press the button. So forth. But the thing that you got to be careful of, if you give this to someone that you're not sure of, is what they could cause it to come in contact with, like other people, cars, homes, windows. You got to be careful of that. So you get a really good one that's flying decently with a decent camera for around $100, $8,500. Or you can go with these very expensive ones like Jay has that extraordinarily good cameras with good stability and a lot of features that can come back home and so forth. So it really depends. It depends on your confidence in the pilot and if they won't, cause damage. And that's what you really need to worry about, I think, more than anything else. Let's see, back to you right there.
You got to be very careful with this stuff. DJI's top of the line is called, they just came out with about a year ago now, maybe 8 months ago, Phantom 2 Pro, and that has a Hasselblad camera in it. And everybody was going, wow, Hasselblad with a one-inch sensor. However, they didn't tell anybody they were only using a quarter of the sensor. Because of power concerns, onboard battery concerns, and that caused sort of a big scandal. So you really got to watch out. And once again, you know, if a kid's starting out, buy him something that he could learn to fly and then go to the next level. That's what I would do, by the way, if there was a kid wanting to get into this. Let him get interested in flying a manual one first. Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Steve, I should let you know that we only heard less than half of your words. I think you're on a handy talkie in a bad location, or maybe your base station has an antenna that's not getting to the repeater very well tonight. We only heard half of your words, Steve. We got most of the gist of what you're trying to say. K-A-2-Y-H-Y. I keep getting callers confused. Yeah, K-A-2-Y-H-Y. So, if you're going to say anything more to us, you got to do something to give us 10 dB more RF, if you know what I mean. I know that Rich number 2, BZ, thinks if you buy the right machine and do the right instruction, that Jeremy's going to install and enjoy this process. I think you stand an 80% chance of becoming very frustrated, because without a mentor, a highly skilled mentor, giving you instruction on your particular quadcopter, I guarantee you're going to get in trouble. It's going to become damaged, you're going to hit things that you shouldn't hit, or you're going to lose it. So Although it's a fun type high technology toy, it may not be the best gift. That's my warning. And I know you're going to go...